You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. There are more than 50 Chinatowns across the country, and the oldest calls California home. San Francisco is not only the oldest, but it is also the largest, established 175 years ago in 1848. Since then, we have a network of Asian American enclaves, from Little Saigon in Sacramento to Japan towns, Korea towns, the list goes on and on. But these communities have evolved over the decades, and in many cases take on a different purpose from why they originated in the first place. CAP Radio's podcast, Mid-Pacific, explores what it means to be Asian American through food, family, politics, and so much more. The newest episode just dropped today, diving into what these towns hold for Asian Americans today when it comes to their sense of belonging. And in the spirit of evolution, we'll learn how new Asian ethnic enclaves are taking shape to preserve their culture in America. Sarah Mizestan is the host of Mid-Pacific and joins us now. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Vicky.
So you are tackling some really big questions in this latest episode. Where do we belong? Where do you feel at home? Where is home? So walk us through your thought process for this episode.
Yeah, definitely. I think the kind of main question of this episode is just, where is Asian America? That was kind of what I set out to kind of figure out, since Asian American is a term, and I kind of, you know, I think our whole podcast is about this feeling of in between and not really feeling like you belong anywhere. And so I wondered, you know, is there a place that we really do feel like we can find that belonging? You know, I myself have always felt a little displaced despite being born in this country. And I think it's kind of this universal feeling because Asians are constantly being asked, where are they really from? And I kind of wish there was a place that you could be like, I'm from this place. And everyone would be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
but, you know, I've always been fascinated by places like Chinatowns, places that in some ways really do seem to be that home away from home for Asian Americans. For me personally, I grew up in New York, and Asian American neighborhoods in Queens ended up feeling more like home for me than the town that I'm actually from, just because these places were where my family would go to do groceries and eat familiar food. I'm sure you probably understand.
Oh, yeah.
and, you know, when I visited San Francisco's Chinatown, a place that I'd argue feels like one of those very original homes for Asian Americans, I was really struck by how some of its residents felt similar to me and had very similar stories. One example is I spoke with resident or former resident Mei Shonig, whose grandfather immigrated from China to the United States to farm the land around the Central Valley. And her grandfather eventually married her grandmother, who was Chinese American, actually born in Grass Valley. Her grandparents did eventually move back to China at some point, but Mei mentions something that really the theme of our podcast, even back then in the early 1900s, you know, her grandmother felt that distinct Asian American feeling of not belonging.
I never knew until my mother's last years that my grandmother was really unhappy, because here she's born in America, and she had all her siblings around her, and all of a sudden they send her back to China. And at first I was like, maybe there wasn't much difference, but there was, because she didn't speak the dialect either. And so she always just kind of felt like she didn't have any friends, nobody to help her, and everybody just kind of ignored her. They just felt that she was just kind of, you know, a foreigner.
And I think that was like this big ha-ha moment for me, just, you know, how far back Asian Americans go in history, and also how that feeling of not belonging, which felt so modern to me, actually existed even back then.
Oh, yeah. When talking with my mom, who's Japanese and English, my grandmother's Japanese, I mean, my grandmother had conversations with my mom like in the 1960s of that same exact feeling. So given that we're focusing, you start off the podcast, this episode specifically, in San Francisco's Chinatown, which on the surface, I mean, that feels like the obvious choice, right? But you really peel away these layers that we might not think about when visiting Chinatown. What were some of those big aha moments that you came across?
Yeah, definitely. So yes, at first glance, San Francisco Chinatown really feels like that place that if you were an Asian American searching for a place of belonging, you could go there and it might feel like home. Right. But in actuality, I guess, especially today, modern times, I guess this and this holds for probably any town in America, honestly, Chinatown is constantly changing and turning over. When I visited, although I expected to feel kind of like I belonged or like, you know, there was like a similarity there, I actually felt distinctly out of place again. Chinatown today is much more geared towards non-Asian tourists, as I'm sure lots of folks already know. Mei Shonik grew up there, but she actually just brought up the fact that it wasn't her parents' intention for her to stay there and continue to preserve that sense of Asian American there. She moved out and away and went on to pursue her own version of the American dream.
And then, you know, the whole thing is things got better and better, and so people started moving further and further out, such to the point right now, San Francisco is pretty much all Chinatown.
I kind of like that. You know, San Francisco's all Chinatown. You don't need to go to San Francisco Chinatown to experience that. I kind of love that. And, you know, I don't know if that was an aha moment or if it was just something to think about, that this idea of a place of belonging is constantly changing for Asian Americans. And, you know, pinpointing one exact location of Asian American culture is going to be tough.
Yeah.
You know, even as these places, you know, Chinatowns, they just, I wish that they were permanent places of belonging, but unfortunately, even for San Francisco Chinatown, not the case.
Yeah, and it evolves. And obviously, San Francisco isn't the only home to a Chinatown or to an Asian American enclave, but are there parts of this history that's really unique to San Francisco? I mean, why was it the first and it's still the largest?
Yeah, great question. So I think the placement of San Francisco's Chinatown as a first landing place for people who were coming over from China played a huge role in its creation. So it was the first stop for people coming over to mine for gold, for folks who are not familiar, and they'd often look to buy supplies in San Francisco before heading inland to, you know, Sacramento and further out. And that's how early commerce specifically for the Chinese community popped up. And then, you know, partially, I think because of its volume, and then, you know, you get anti-Chinese and anti-Asian laws that popped up around the like early 1900s, late 1800s, that prevented people from settling permanently in like these other towns that they had. And there is kind of evidence around us, but those were not permanent places because of these laws. And people kind of ended up going back to San Francisco Chinatown as a result, because that was pretty much the only place that Asian Americans were allowed to, say, buy a business or own property.
Wow. So it became a refuge.
Yeah, exactly.
In a huge sense. So in what way is San Francisco's Chinatown story also indicative of the many Asian American enclaves that exist today in California?
Yeah. You know, I think that there is, and that's probably maybe the nugget that stays with San Francisco Chinatown today, is that there absolutely is that pride in the fact that this place was a sanctuary, a true sanctuary for Asian Americans for a very, very long time. But, you know, at the end of the day, I also think that San Francisco's Chinatown is that classic story of an immigrant enclave that has evolved over generations. Here's Andrew Leong. He's a professor at UMass Boston who studies Chinatowns, just talking about that universal feeling of belonging that we find in any Chinatown across the country.
We find a sense of belonging and security in this particular place. It is sanctuary for us. And that's why, you know, we gravitate and we want to make sure that, you know, Chinatowns exist, not just for the Chinese, really, but for all Asian Americans, you know, into the next generations.
I think we first saw Chinatown, like you said, a true refuge for Chinese immigrants who literally weren't allowed to settle elsewhere. But we've also seen how times have changed. The residents have moved out, how they've been replaced by newer immigrants, some of whom may not necessarily be Chinese or from the same region of China, which I think is important to note. And I think you can see this trajectory happening in lots of neighborhoods across the country, whether it's, you know, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, or even more ethnic specific neighborhoods here in Sacramento.
Right. I mean, I'm from L.A., so I think not only of Chinatown, but I think of Japantown, Koreatown as well. And there's similar issues surrounding that. So when did these other enclaves begin popping up?
Yeah. So I think the surprising thing that I found in diving into this question of what happens when we lose our Chinatown, I think that we start to see a newer wave of, and I'm just using Chinatown broadly. Of course, I also mean Japantown, Koreatown, these sort of like neighborhoods that are sanctuaries. I think probably around the 80s or 90s is when you start to see that like upward mobility of those former residents who lived in Chinatown, who are now looking to achieve the American dream, but maybe also looking for That same sense of belonging and security. Obviously, everyone wants to kind of live around people who are kind of share their own the same values, same cultural ties. And so I think it's super fascinating then to kind of turn our lens to the San Gabriel Valley in Los Angeles, which I'm sure most people are familiar with. Here's Ryan Liu. He's a resident of the San Gabriel Valley, talking about what it was like for him to grow up there as a Chinese American.
Yeah, I think what makes this place special, and I think a lot of other diaspora communities can relate to this, is that when I'm in this area, you know, I don't really have to change who I am, and that this place sort of, it represents me, and I feel like a good representative of the area.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's important to note here that the San Gabriel Valley, as I believe you've covered already, was kind of marketed specifically for Chinese Americans who were moving out of Chinatown. Ryan Liu is a great example. His family initially settled in Los Angeles, Chinatown, and then moved out to the suburbs and were looking for a place to buy. And the San Gabriel Valley is a place that is extremely friendly towards Asian Americans. And so I kind of thought it was really awesome to see that this like feeling of belonging could be preserved just in like a slightly different place.
Oh, yeah. Growing up, I knew that the San Gabriel Valley was really where, I guess, growing up, I was told it was like the true Chinatown and where you really got like the best, for me, the best Asian American food. So totally. In Sacramento, though, I mean, we may not have a Chinatown per se, but there are Asian American communities with a similar story or just commonalities. I mean, I think of Little Saigon in the south part of the city, also the town of Locke in the county along the Delta. What can you tell us about these places?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned two really just interesting places that are both on different ends of the spectrum in terms of those trajectories that we typically see in these sorts of neighborhoods. So I think on the one hand, you have Locke, which, you know, has almost gone entirely in one direction. It's a town that used to have a very strong Chinese American presence, but today there's almost no Chinese Americans who actually live there. And it's mostly a museum to the former Chinese population. And it's kind of a tourist spot. Like, yeah, you go there and you're not really going to eat like authentic Chinese food or authentic Chinese American food. Little Saigon is newer, though. There is a very large concentration of Vietnamese Americans who live there. And that kind of came up in the 80s, 90s. But we're starting to see maybe, again, that typical American migration out. There are still businesses there that serve the Vietnamese population. But when I did reporting there last year, you know, a lot of younger residents are moving away. And honestly, that's what the hope is for these places. When you come and you bring your family, you kind of do hope, at least for the folks in Little Saigon, when I spoke with them, the hope is kind of that you establish your business, you gain economic security and an economic footing, so then the next generation can move out.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with Sarah Mises-Tan, the host of CAP Radio's new podcast, Mid-Pacific, about the evolution and the meaning behind Asian American enclaves like Chinatowns. So you do this wide canvas across the state. We go to San Francisco, you go down to the San Gabriel Valley in Southern California. When talking to Asian Americans, with obviously each have their own story, their own identity, how did they help you better understand what Chinatowns or other enclaves mean to them today compared to the original inception of them?
You know, I think the big takeaway is really that these places are temporary. And in a way that kind of makes me sad, you know, as an Asian American who feels it's so important for us to have spaces where we can feel true belonging, like Ryan Liu mentioned, it is sad to kind of know that, yeah, maybe this is a place that you feel belonging right now, but it may not be the same way for your kids or the next generation or even in the next 20 years. And, you know, I think that's natural. But of course, I also think that it's important to note that there is kind of a difference. And that's kind of what I try to tease out in this podcast, is that for Asian Americans, you're constantly being asked where you're from, where you're from. You want to kind of like pull like a place in America as a place that you're from. And having that place where you feel belonging be a little slippery makes this, it kind of feels like this like never-ending task in a way.
Yeah, and you also talk about just, you know, the bittersweetness that comes with nostalgia, right? And
totally.
And which is so understandable and so human. I mean, from San Francisco to, you talked about Locke as well, and Sac County, I mean, have places like that really just become more for tourists to experience the culture and the food.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, so I think maybe when there isn't a strong eye towards preservation or towards making sure that a community is still serving the population that it originally was formed around or the immigrant population that it was formed around, I think it's really easy for these places to slip into a different role from facing inwards and serving their community to kind of outwardly facing and serving tourists and packaging. You know, I'm thinking of like a lot of the stores when you walk along San Francisco, Chinatown, the main boulevard now, but, you know, packaging quote-unquote Asian for non-Asians, which kind of makes me feel uncomfortable, or it makes you feel weird as an Asian person. You know, I'm thinking, you know, the stores with the Asian trinkets that Asian people don't actually buy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Given that you also explore these newer Asian ethnic enclaves, I mean, going back to the 80s and 90s in the San Gabriel Valley, communities like Monterey Park, when did these communities really begin developing? Was that really the marker, like the 80s and 90s?
Yeah, I think so. So a lot of the newer enclaves, I would say, at least from what I've heard, 1980s, maybe the 1970s, and then into the early 1990s, Little Saigon and Sacramento. And then we also in our podcast explore Cambodia Town in Long Beach, which did kind of come to fruition in the 1990s with an immigration of Cambodian immigrants to California. And, you know, I think it's interesting to just hear how these places are now beginning to grapple with that idea that as you achieve economic security and the American dream, you know, they've been there, what, like 30, 40, 50 years now. You're having the next generation kind of looking at, okay, well, like, what does it mean to be Asian American? What does it mean to be Asian American in this space? And do I even want to be Asian American in this space? Does it still hold relevance for me? And, you know, I think it's interesting to see, especially in our conversations in Cambodia Town, hearing that younger generation grapple with that question of, do I move away or do I start a business that's kind of relevant to me and my peers? And we preserve the sense and this pride that comes in living here. But it may not be exactly what our parents had in mind. You know, maybe our parents thought the American dream was moving out to the suburbs or something, and we end up wanting to stay here.
Oh, I'm just... All the light bulbs are popping up for a lot of people when it comes to pursuing your life in a way that perhaps your parents or elders didn't want you to. You know, this is just so interesting. Finally, Sarah, your podcast, it's really, you led with it. You're exploring this feeling of in-betweenness, right? This being between two worlds. What does it tell you that Asian towns, they're evolving, as we're learning, but they're not disappearing and they're not just simply transforming away from its original intention?
Yeah. So I hate to repeat what you've said, but truly, I think the evolution of these Asian American spaces really is the physical embodiment of feeling in between. You know, when we went to Cambodia Town, spoke with some of the younger generation there, a lot of them mentioned, and, you know, I think the Cambodian immigration experience is something that's very particular in itself, which we also get into in this episode. But they kind of mentioned that, like, being Cambodian in itself, it was hard to have a sense of Cambodian identity when they were living in Cambodia. And when they came over to America, Cambodia Town kind of served as a place for them to reinvent the idea of being Cambodian. And so there is a drive and at least maybe a desire to kind of preserve that and kind of keep that idea evolving with the younger generations who say, you know, they don't have a whole lot of experience with actual Cambodia. But Cambodian American, they know, they feel that it's important to preserve that since, yeah, I don't know, I'm kind of talking myself in circles here, but it can be a little bit fluid.
Yeah.
But, you know, as our expert Andrew Leong mentioned, it's really important that we try to preserve these places in some sort of way and keep them so that they're still serving Asian Americans, because these are truly those original spaces of belonging in America for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Vicky.
Sarah Mises-Tan is the host of Mid-Pacific. That is Cap Radio's new podcast. New episodes drop on Thursdays. Today, we dove into the evolution of Asian enclaves like Chinatowns and what place they hold today for Asian Americans and their sense of belonging. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.